Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
How do you reach... So if you're telling me the suspension ends with the completion of the World Series, a suspension cannot end without a World Series being contested then. So doesn't the latter half of the discipline erase the first half of the discipline?
Well,
like it sounds like to me... a lawyer could destroy that without even taking 2 years of law school.
Well, to me, it's as long as there's a World Series in any form, you could play a one-game season, and as long as there's a World Series at the end of it, he's back at the end of that World Series.
Right, but if there wasn't a World Series, if there isn't a World Series, how are you back after something that was the completion point of your suspension if it didn't even happen?
I think... a judge would infer that if there was no 2020 season at all, and they started and declared when they resumed the 2021 season, a judge could infer from that that for legal purposes, the 2020 World Series no longer exists, and you cannot suspend somebody past the point where it becomes indefinite, because the way they worded it was specific to the 2020 season. 2020 World Series, and if you say we're not having one, that doesn't mean that the punishment suddenly becomes open-ended. I mean, I don't know how baseball can wriggle out of this, and I'm not sure baseball's going to bother to. I think they got this. They did the deal they did with those two guys so that Jim Crane could avoid being suspended himself, because that's really what that was about. He said, I'll fire them myself as long as you don't suspend me too. So he bought himself a pass. But I don't think there's any way that you can tell Jeff Luhnow and A.J. Hinch, well, there was no 2020 World Series, so you can never work in this industry again. I don't think there's a way to make that work.
Astros owner Crane was a real villain in all this and just offered up empty soundbite after head scratcher after that was poorly worded throughout the entire press conference, where they basically had a screw you, we're keeping the trophy attitude. Today, Jim Crane did some incredibly generous donations concerning Houston medical workers and first responders, getting them their personal protection equipment that they so desperately need. And so Jim Crane, who has been wearing the bad guy crown of Major League Baseball, and rightfully so, for a while now, actually had a day of a good job, Jimmy. Way to make a human out of yourself for just a moment. That's a very good thing. There are five, I believe, real quick, Ray, JD, five Major League Baseball teams in the state of California: Giants, Dodgers, Angels, Padres, Oakland Athletics. Did I miss anybody?
No.
Thank you. So, in Major League Baseball in California, four of the five have not suspended anyone in terms of job cuts. You won't believe what the one is. The one who claims to be the poorest of them all, the Oakland A's. The Giants, Dodgers, Angels, who are awash with money, and to an extent, the San Diego Padres, who are at least spending like they have money, like a Major League Baseball team for the first time in a long time, sent out notices today about job cuts to the staff game day hoi polloi. The A's have not. Ray, you asked, does this mean anything? And I've been thinking about it, and I don't know what it means or what it might mean other than maybe the A's were just operating at a bare-bones staff as it was, and there really isn't much. Boy, I hate to say people's jobs is fat to trim, but for the lack of a better phrase, I will. Not that I'm trying to refer to anyone as that, but is that maybe it? I don't know. Or maybe the A's can actually say we're more altruistic than the next. I don't know.
It may be that they're planning an announcement later, or at least planning to let their employees. I mean, it just struck me that when I saw the story from Ken Rosenthal, it was odd that the one team that everybody always says, you know, chokes a nickel until it becomes two dimes, is the one that hasn't made any sort of plans for staff reduction or furlough yet. And it may very well be that the A's are planning not to do that, that maybe John Fisher is going to carry them.
That would be wonderful.
You know, but I did find it interesting that the Giants, who are allegedly flush with cash, are maybe starting to get a little skittish about paying people open-endedly when there's no work for them to do or not enough work for them to do. I'm not sure what it means, but it struck me as interesting that of the five teams, four of them, and let's not fool ourselves, all 30 teams make money. That the one that seemingly has the lowest overhead and the lowest profit margin is the one that has not yet put out any notices. And again, they may put it out tomorrow, in which case this becomes a nothing burger. But for the moment, it just struck me as interesting.
Oh, my God. And by the way, to the text line and the palpable lack of self-confidence in some A's fans who just said, wow, Damon, you had to put the A's last on your list even after the LA teams and Padres. Could you please try to hide your disdain a little better? All I did was read from a sentence that Ray wrote in our prep today, and Ray is – you don't hate the Oakland A's at all, Ray. I mean, Ray wrote a sentence that I was reading from. He determined that order, not me. So there you go, Mr. Oh, you're always slighting us, Damon. You're accusing me of something that happened in a sentence I didn't even write.
I think you could probably ignore those. The reason why the A's got mentioned last is because they're the one team that is not doing something. It's merely sentence construction.
There you go.
To your pal on the text line, who you didn't even really have to acknowledge, ultimately. It just, nothing happened here. There's nothing to look at.
Yeah.
The A's are doing something slightly more noble than the other four teams. Take that as the fact you need to go away with.
There you go.
Damon, we got it. We can't let this segment of baseball go by without asking Ray for today's MLB simulations. I believe there were 10 games today, right, Ray?
Do we have updated standings? The Giants did not play.
No, home opener tomorrow, right?
Yeah. All right. Now, there are two simulations we're going to use for purposes of this. One is the Stratomatic one, in which area the A's are currently 6-2. The Giants are 1-5.
Wait, didn't the A's start 6-0? Are they on a two-game losing streak in
Pretend World? They're on a two-game losing streak in Minnesota.
Oh, man.
So, trouble's happening. The A's, the Giants are 1-5 in the Stratomatic fantasy world. They are 3-3 in the Baseball Reference out-of-the-park baseball simulator. So,
forever.
And the Giants in the Stratomatic one have scored 8 runs in 6 games and have 1 homer from Wilmer Flores.
Surprisingly, that doesn't seem that unrealistic to me.
Yeah, but both feel very much based in real world and expectations of the season that we're going to get.
I will be interested to see tomorrow's simulation to see what kind of crowd, imaginary crowd, the Giants get in the Stratomatic one, because the Stratomatic simulator, for some reason, announces crowd size, and the Baseball Reference one doesn't, for the obvious reason that even in a simulator, you can't, you know, you're not simulating crowd size. All you're doing is throwing out 5 random numbers.
Yeah, I could see how they could simulate time of game, but how they simulate what the paid attendance would be
Well, look, they're putting guys on the DL. They're sending guys down to the minors and bringing them back up. There are a lot of things you can do with a simulator.
So you're telling me Connor Joe might get an at-bat before the year's over?
Well, not with either of the teams here. I think he's in somebody else's I want to say Toronto. I could be wrong, but I think he
might be right. Wherever he is, we're right there with him in spirit. That's for sure. 888-95
Dodgers organization, actually.
Connor Joe. 888-957-9570 is the number. It is really good to have you here today. Jay Billis is going to join us in about 10 minutes from now. We did a little show homework last night. We watched HBO's documentary on the AAU underbelly of college basketball called The Scheme. It is well done. I thought it was good. The peek behind the curtain reveals the fact that there are really no angels, and everyone involved with the recruitment of kids who are good enough to go get Division I scholarships, and especially the tip of that iceberg, there is a generation of hangers-ons and people who are just users of these kids. And the entire thing is basically a step-by-step, here's how these kids are getting used. And Christian Dawkins, who is a smart guy from Saginaw, Michigan, who was dialed into the Michigan Prep High School AAU basketball culture, started monetizing the ability to offer a direct line of communication to these kids. He monetized it for himself more than he did for any real kid or a coach. But what I thought was a powerful statement from him in the documentary was when he simply said, look, everybody's got their hands out and everybody's getting paid except the kids, except by me, basically. He's like, everybody's screwing them over. At least me, I'm giving them a cut. And there is something incredibly right about that, even though the whole thing is incredibly wrong. He is asked early on, have you done anything wrong? And he had to pause for a long time before he was able to answer that. Everything is on the edge of decency. All of it. We're going to talk about it with Skip Bayless. Never. Jay Billis.
Wow, you were dangerously close to having one less chair filled on this show.
No kidding. Yeah, I would have walked away from that one, too. It would have been a JD and Skip first take if there ever was one. But Jay Billis will join. We wouldn't do that to you, JD. That would just be a terrible way. It's a terrible thing to do to anybody.
There's a joke to be made here, but I'm not going to make it.
There you go.
I'm a coward.
Always makes for good radio. A joke to be made, not going to make it. Look at it this way. If it keeps you employed, it's definitely the right thing to do right now. 888-957-9570. Everyone is at home consuming the shows in different ways here on 95.7 The Game. And that is kind of what makes radio great. You can get it so many different ways, including radio.com. You need to go to the App Store, download radio.com, favorite 95.7 The Game, and boom, you'll be able to take us anywhere you go. If you're at home, just ask your Alexa, your Google to play 95.7 The Game. We're going to play a little sports talk radio with Jay Billis, not Skip Bayless. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry I threatened you in that regard. Damon Ratto and Kolsky with JD filling in here on 95.7 The Game. Oh, also brought to you by our good friends at Chilton Auto Body. While we adapt to new normal, Chilton Auto Body is committed to helping maintain a sense of normalcy. And thank you, Chilton Auto Body, for your support during these times and sponsoring 95.7 The Game. All 12 Chilton Auto Body locations are open. They'll support you. They'll pick up and deliver your car when it's ready for the road. You can schedule an appointment today at ChiltonAutoBody.com. With JD alongside, Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
The moral of the story is f***ed in Stepway.
Unconventional. And LaMelo Ball, along with his manager, Jermaine Jackson, have purchased his Australian NBL team, the Illawarra Hawks. And that is kind of an interesting thing for a young man to do. He's obviously got a loan floated to him. I don't know what NBL basketball teams are going for, but apparently, you know, along with it being a solid investment in some way, he has really taken a shine to Australia, that team, the city it's in, and he liked it so much, he bought the damn place. That's unheard of. That's never happened before. A guy who goes overseas to play a cup of coffee buys the coffee cup.
Well, I suspect that his manager probably put down the money.
Of course.
And beyond that, he'll probably be the one running the team because LaMelo Ball will have other things to do. But I think in terms of long term, he may have sort of set himself up with a starter company, which you don't normally hear players of that age doing. So maybe this is his starter gig, you know, not to play there, but to run it and maybe turn it over for a profit in a few years, maybe when sports gets back to normal.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me, just the whole dynamic. And, you know, is he going to have, you know, others in a similar position than him want to go, you know, play basically for that, you know, for them now? You know, if it winds up in a situation where, you know, players still have to play college ball for a year, it sounds like that's obviously on the way out at some point. But, yeah, fascinating stuff all the way around.
Jermaine Jackson, his business partner, said, quote, "When high school kids hear LaMelo owns the team, they'll want to come. They'll know that they'll be taken care of. We're going to put the organization on steroids, building it into a program that guys want to play for." In other words, it's his professional AAU team that plays in the Australian Basketball League. That's kind of what it is. And as we watch the NCAA have holes shot in it from every single direction, and it's businessing itself into irrelevance, and then COVID-19 is just helping push it out the door. Options that don't include signing up for amateurism, the guise of amateurism in college basketball, are going to start to look as good as the idea going to play college basketball for some of these kids. If you can offer me the kind of training that's going to get me right on the radar of NBA teams and you can pay me, which no college can, yeah, I'll go do that. Instead of going to play in the Big Ten, I'll go play down under in Australia. I'll go play in the G League, and I'll just be a pro right from the jump instead of pretending I'm not a pro as I go play at the highest level of, air quote, amateur basketball in America. It's a brilliant long-term play, I think.
Sorry about that. Maybe a little sneeze there. Yeah, a little
Ray.
Sneeze. Well, I can't walk away from the microphone so far that I can't. You know, I'm trying my best to muffle it.
Just let her rip, big fella. Don't worry about it. Just let her rip. Just make sure you sneeze into your elbow. We're keeping societal standards even as we're doing shows from our own home.
Bless you, Ray.
Okay. No, I don't know. Excuse me. I don't know how many players can really take advantage of this because I don't think the pay in the NBL is particularly good compared to what you could get in Europe. So I don't know that this is a sort of fast track to an Uber AAU team as much as it is sort of a primer on how to run a team on the ground level that maybe it's what he's after. I hope he's not going to get taken for a walk on this because who knows. But I think in terms of talent acquisition, most players are still going to want to go to the place where you get seen the most. And far more people of import watch college basketball than they do the NBL. And it's really only very recently that those same people have taken an interest in European leagues. And at that, only about six or seven. So I suspect that this is more of a business decision than it is building a new underground railroad for kids who don't want to, you know, try to do 4 years at Morehead State.
Is JD still there?
No, I'm with you. Yeah, no, I'm here. I didn't have anything more to add.
Oh, okay. I
yeah, sorry. No.
I thought you'd have a cherry on top of the sundae. I did. To me, you know, when we look back at this moment in time in basketball history, I almost regret saying this, but look, the Ball family, that's officially one of the most unique out there in the history of this sport. And you don't see a family come around like this very often. And I'm not even really involving the dad, who is a paternal interloper of the worst kind. He really, truly is. But, you know, getting drafted, having a son drafted to Los Angeles to only find himself then traded, where he almost improves instantly when he gets traded and is turned into a semi-interesting NBA player. The brothers, who were younger, are now being projected. They have been projected as better. And look, LaMelo Ball might be the number one pick in the draft. He probably won't slip past 4 or 5, like almost guaranteed. And he's an owner with his business partner of an NBL team. It's you ain't never seen nothing like this before. Like, in the world of, yeah, I've heard that. You ain't ever heard anything like the Ball family. And for once, it's not the dad's big mouth that is at the center of the attention. Like, the kids are actually starting to separate themselves from the wake of the dad's annoying media run. And the kids are so much more interesting than the dad ever pretended to be.
I think it's interesting because they also have a lot easier access to money than LeVar did, because they can basically amortize, you know, what they spent to buy that team against their first NBA contract, which I presume will still be governed by the current CBA, which means it's relatively slotted. Beyond that, again, I think it's an interesting business choice, because at this time in history, I'm no longer sure how much of a growth industry sports franchises are, because I'm not sure what a growth industry is in this current economy. And I have a feeling that a lot of things are going to change about presumptions we've had between now and the time that the vaccine becomes something that you can get at CVS for $8. So I think he's rolling the dice on a team whose value may tank, but maybe he's already factored that into the sale price. I'd be interested to know how much money they laid out for this, because I think that's the key to knowing what the real motivation here was.
Right. How much does it cost to buy an Australian basketball team? Could we buy an Australian basketball team?
Well, I know I cannot. That I'll just say that. Maybe you and Ray could put in together and buy one, but I don't think I'm out on that.
I mean, no, I'm not saying that we're that deep pocketed, but maybe you can pick up one of these things for like $35,000. I mean, I don't know. what is the cost? What is the value of the highest level of basketball in Australia, yet in an outskirt location? Illawarra, do you have any idea where that is? Perth, Sydney, and that might be the list. I think they also got a coral reef down there, but I don't know much about the continent of Australia. Ray, are you Australia savvy?
I'm not savvy enough.
2 to 3 million? 2 to 3 million. All right. Respect Illawarra.
Yeah, it's in New South Wales, which is the southeastern part of the country and the most populous. So it's not out in the boondocks.
All right. Jay Billis, good enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. He is chief among smart guys when it comes to talking college hoops on ESPN. And I've always said, if there were to be a conference or a college basketball commissioner, he would be well suited to be just that. We want to talk to Jay Billis about a whole bunch of things here on 95.7 The Game. We really appreciate you stopping on once again with us, Jay. We want to begin with what we all kind of assigned ourselves last night as homework. We all watched HBO's The Scheme. And all of us are cynical sports talk radio hosts who expected to see an awful lot of what we saw. But man, oh man, the complicity of Sean Miller at Arizona and Will Wade at LSU on FBI wiretap, like, it's all right there, Jay. In one call, Wade even says of a recruit, "We could compensate him better than the NBA rookie minimum." How does either of those guys remain employed in the light of that today?
You know, it's really hard to imagine for me. It's been interesting. You know, there was one thing that I was horribly wrong on 3 years ago when this whole thing came up, and that is I thought that it would be very difficult for the coaches implicated in this FBI investigation to keep their jobs and to keep their careers. And the truth is, because I thought that their bosses wouldn't tolerate it. And the truth is, I was wrong. That you know, the ADs and presidents that are out there lecturing us on integrity, you know, they don't know what the word means. It's kind of like Inigo Montoya. You know, I don't think of that word means what you think it means. It's absurd. And look, I'm not naive, and neither are any of you. I know that cheating exists in college basketball and college football, and it has for 100 years. I know that. And I'm friends with guys that I know are doing this. But the problem is, when they get caught, they don't have an excuse. And you know, I don't blame any of these coaches for standing up at a press conference and saying that none of this is true. You're not under oath at a press conference. It's not, you get to do that. That's fine. I get it. And I'm not saying that if I weren't in the middle of this, I wouldn't do the same thing and just hope that things work out. And if it doesn't, I'm still going to get 3 or 4 more years of $5 million a year. So I'd bank, you know, $15, $20 million while I'm denying something that everybody knows is obvious. But what shocks me and disappoints me is that their bosses just go, well, nothing to see here, so no change in employment status. And their fellow presidents and athletic directors, while they may privately say, "I can't believe this," or "I'm so disappointed," they never say it publicly. So, and I realize that's asking a lot because, you know, it is asking a lot of a you know, ADs in the Pac-12 and the SEC to stand up, or the commissioners in those leagues, Larry Scott and Greg Sankey, to stand up and say, you know what, this is not, we are not going to tolerate this of one of our members. That's asking a lot. But I don't think it's asking as much of the AD and the president at each of those schools and all of these schools to say, you know what, I might have been born at night, but it wasn't last night, and I heard the wiretaps, and this person's not working for me. But none of them want to do it because, like, the LSU one, I'll tell you exactly what I think is at work here. When Will Wade was first reported on wiretap saying what now is totally confirmed, all the fans were like, wait a minute. Let's deal with this after the season. We'll vacate stuff later. Like, we get good and all of a sudden we gotta fire our coach? Like, no. You know, other teams in our league, that's what they do. Like, we'll be fine. Let's keep winning and we'll vacate it later if there's a problem. And the athletic director tried to get rid of Will Wade and they fired him. So it's the fan base that they're worried about. And as you guys know, in college sports now, and maybe this has existed for longer than I've been willing to admit it, but the fans don't care. So if your school is implicated, your fans are going to go, none of it's true. And it doesn't matter if dead bodies fall out of the coach's trunk. They're going to say, none of it's true. And if it's your rival, then you're going to say, at the slightest hint of impropriety, you're going to say, see, I told you they were cheaters. And then everybody else, you don't care at all. So that's essentially what college sports has become. And the ADs and presidents at specific schools, they're not gonna do anything unless they're required to do it. And so now I know, and so now I'm not gonna worry about it anymore since this came up. So I don't, you know, I hate to say this, but I don't care anymore. So I don't care about their denials. I don't care about their excuses. But the one thing I will not listen to anymore, I don't want any president or any athletic director to talk to me about integrity. Because until you show some, you need to say integrity-ish or integrity-light or something else. But don't say it. Don't lecture me on integrity and all this, you know, welfare of the student athlete nonsense, because I'm tired of hearing it.
The thing that struck me from the documentary was how brazenly everybody sort of viewed the process, as though, I don't care that it's the FBI, they can't get me if I don't roll. And it almost seemed, and I'm reluctant to use this comparison, but it's the only one that comes to my mind, it almost seemed like organized crime, that if you get caught, you do the time, but you make sure you don't roll on those above you because they'll take care of themselves. And that's what seems to have happened here, is that they are so confident, A, in their ability to be made bulletproof from this, and B, they had so little regard for the FBI's ability to get their hands around this, that they simply walked along blithely and said, go ahead, take your best shot. Was that your take as well or no?
Yeah, yes and no, Ray. Well, here's what I would say is, first, for the coaches, for Sean Miller, Will Wade, any other coach implicated in this, they did basically all that they could. So they got legal advice, and frankly, it was smart legal advice for their attorneys and their counsel to say, listen, you can resign if you want to, but then everybody's going to take everything that's said as true. Or you could go to a press conference, just deny all this, and then write it out and see what happens. Because we don't know when and if the wiretaps are going to come out, if they'll be used as evidence at trial. But even if it does come out, it's not going to come out for a period of time, probably a period of a year, 2 years, maybe even three. So you'll get paid during that period, and you can bank a ton of money while that's going on. So it was either just admit it, fall on your sword, or write it out and see what happens. So that was good advice and good strategy. The government and the FBI did what most federal prosecutors do in cases like this. They went after the low-hanging fruit and the sort of the lower level offenders. And what typically happens is they charge someone that can't really defend themselves, and then they try to flip them and they move their way up the chain. You don't want to indict the multimillionaire coaches first, because they've got the money and the resources to fight you. So you get evidence on them by getting those that don't have the resources to fight you to just roll over. And just like you guys will probably remember this name of Myron Piggy in the early 2000s, I think it was. He was an AAU guy in the Kansas City area. And he was paying players and all that stuff, but he got brought up on federal charges, not similar to these, but within the ballpark, you know, that kind of thing. But it wasn't where they were defrauding the schools, this novel theory they came up with this time. So similar to Christian Dawkins, neither one of them would roll. Like, they would not cooperate. They went to trial, and both of them were convicted. Now, Piggy did 3 years or so in Leavenworth, and Christian Dawkins, I think, got a year and still under appeal, so he's still out right now. But that was the rub here, was that they didn't cooperate. And so they weren't able to move up the chain as easily, and so far have not. Now, maybe they will in the future, but Dawkins' attorney subpoenaed Sean Miller of Arizona and Will Wade of LSU to Christian Dawkins' trial, and the judge wouldn't let it in because it wasn't apparently relevant to the issues at bar. Now, I might not have agreed with that. But in order to believe, like, if you want to take Sean Miller's side in this, in the light most favorable to Sean Miller, you'd have to believe that all of this was made up. So Christian Dawkins lied, which, okay, maybe you could understand that he was lying in order to make himself seem like a bigger deal. All right, that's plausible. Then you'd have to think that his top assistant, Book Richardson, who was caught on wiretap saying that Sean was paying DeAndre Ayton $10,000 a month. You would have to believe that, not knowing he was being taped by the FBI, lied about Sean. So you'd have to believe that too. And then you'd have to believe that Steve Haney, Dawkins' attorney, subpoenaed him to the trial without any basis, evidentiary basis for doing so. So he was willing, as an officer of the court, willing to perpetrate a fraud on the court. So that's a lot. That's a lot that an Arizona fan has to swallow in order to believe that none of this is true. And I'm not, look, I'm not that naive, but more power to them. If you can work your way through all this stuff, like I've always liked, you know, I've always liked these guys. Will Wade worked for a good friend of mine. He worked for Tommy Amaker at Harvard. He worked for Oliver Purnell. He worked side to side with Shaka Smart at Clemson. And just about everybody I know said never had a hint. They never thought that he'd wind up in this position. So look, I know a lot of guys that have broken the rules, but this one you're kind of saying, well, what are you going to do? You're going to say, well, I don't believe any of it. I mean, that would be foolish and naive. You'd have to be an idiot to say none of this is true. And there are a lot of idiots out there, frankly.
Jay, as serious as this has all been with COVID-19, it still surprises the heck out of me that we're not getting ready for a Final Four. I mean, what have these last couple of weeks been like for you? It doesn't surprise me we're to this point, but it's still startling to think of the fact that there is no Final Four. What have the last couple of weeks been like with no tournament?
There's been a lot of mixed feelings about things that when the week of the early March week, whatever the dates were, when the Monday, the Ivy League canceled its tournament. I think a lot of people kind of shook their heads saying, why would you do that? That's an overreaction. And I'm not sure whether I didn't feel it was an overreaction at the time. I was really lucky. I had a several medical professional, really close friends of mine that had reached out to me saying, hey, listen, you need to stop flying. And I thought, really? I need to stop flying? And I had some of those same friends. They gave me a lot of materials to read on what was coming. And I read it all. So I felt like, I'm certainly not an expert in it, but for a layperson, I felt like I was about as educated as I could be for a layperson. So when we got to Wednesday and the World Health Organization declared a global pandemic, then I was like, uh-oh, you know, there's no way that we're going to be playing games tomorrow. And, you know, obviously the Rudy Gobert thing Wednesday night, that Wednesday accelerated everything. And for a lot of people, Gobert was the tipping point. For me personally, it was the World Health Organization declaring it a pandemic. But on Thursday, when I got to the ACC tournament, I thought that there's no way that they'll let a single person into this building. None of the teams will show up. We won't play at all. And we got all the way to 15 minutes before tip before they called the tournament off. And I thought, my goodness, how could that have taken that long? And then the NCAA called the NCAA tournament off. And to me, there's been kind of it's been a back and forth for me mentally and emotionally of, boy, I really miss what I should have been doing now, what we all should have been dealing with, which was our normal lives and talking about sports and enjoying ourselves. And then as soon as this weekend was over, I was going to take my wife on vacation, that kind of stuff. And then balancing that with the fact that there's real hardship out there, that people have lost their jobs, their careers are in limbo, businesses are going under, the stock market, the economy, not to mention the health crisis that we're in, where people are dying, healthcare professionals are stressed. And my wife brought this up to me, and you guys, I'm sorry I've rambled so long, but you guys tell me if this resonates with you. You know, we're all of about the same age, or at least most of us, where we've lived through some things, but nothing like this. And my wife said, well, you know, she reminded me of something when I was a kid. You know, I used to tease my grandmother because she used a tea bag over and over again until it wouldn't even color the water anymore before she started the new one. And we used to tease her saying, come on, grandma, we can afford a tea bag every time you want to have a cup of tea. And it didn't really occur to me as a kid that she'd lived through the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic, and she had lived through the Great Depression and through World War II, where everything was rationed for like 4 years in this country. And she'd lived through, you know, two world wars, you name it. And I'm complaining that I can't go get a cup of coffee in the morning. It's kind of hard to, you know, you're soldiering through and trying to keep a good attitude about this, but I have a hard time complaining about not being able to watch the sports I want to watch and do my job. And, you know, I'm quarantined in my nice house, when other generations have gone through much more. And then there are so many people that need help And really, I should be concentrating on helping more rather than complaining about, geez, my, you know, look how my cushy job got turned upside down. That's a hard one for me to wrap my head around, honestly.
Jay Billis here on 95.7 The Game. And no, you definitely hit home with that. I mean, we saw past generations asked to pick up a gun to sacrifice for their nation. We're asking a generation to pick up their remote. And I know that it's not that simple and easy because people are really hurting out there. But, yeah, you know, I look at it. My wife and I, we have an eight-month-old at home. And because we're all working from home, we're getting an element of more time with our son that otherwise we would have never had, and we're trying to look on the bright side, you know, in any way we can. And we're really happy to be talking about the just pleasant distraction that sports is. It's not important. It's not critically valuable to any of us. But for some of us, well, I guess our paychecks are attached to it. But it really is the toy department. And I'd like to, Jay, walk through the toy department a little bit concerning the Golden State Warriors as they get the pick off the shelf. Who knows where it'll be, but it really feels like a premium pick will be theirs. When you're looking at this draft, which no one said very many nice things about it, how interesting can the Warriors really get, or creative, outside of what looks to be the obvious of Wiseman, Edwards, or LaMelo Ball, who, by the way, is about to be the first ever player drafted who owns a basketball team on another continent, apparently.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? The you know, the draft is not very good. That doesn't mean there aren't going to be very good players, even better than very good, that come out of the draft. There could be great players that come out of it. Who knows? But it is not one of the better drafts that we have seen. So, to use your term, a premium pick may not get you a premium talent, a premium spot in the draft that traditionally has yielded you great may not do that this year. So, you're gonna have to be very smart and find the value that may be a little bit more difficult to find than in normal years. I heard a colleague of mine, a valued colleague, Mike Schmitz of ESPN, said the other night that he's heard more than ever that this is a need draft. So if you've got a need at a certain position or a certain skill set or whatever, this is the draft where you draft by need rather than by best player available. So obviously the Warriors can go a number of different directions on the need front. But to me, for them, the best player to fit need would probably be James Wiseman, because he reminds me a lot of Chris Bosh when he came out of Georgia Tech back in 2003, I think it was. And you know, he's a left-handed kid that 7 feet, can really run, and very skilled, block shots. You know, you can lob it to him. You know, he can he really rim run, does a lot of really good things, and very, very talented. And I think a great young man. I've met him and spent some time with him, and I was really, really impressed with him. The other one is Edwards, that is probably the most talented offensive player, but has given you, or at least given me, I should say, the feeling that he's a little bit, he needs to refine his game. He doesn't guard anybody, but he's so physically gifted and can score in bunches and make really difficult shots. The question is, does he take too many difficult shots? He should get a lot of easier ones. I may be the one out in left field on this one, because again, Mike Schmitz, who I value his opinion as much as anybody I know, thinks LaMelo Ball is the most talented player in the draft. I just wonder about his ability to socialize into the league. That, you know, you pointed out, like, he's going to be the only player coming to the league that already owns a team, which is so bizarre to even think about. He's not even really gone to high school and you know, never finished high school. So you wonder, like, are his social skills up to where they need? I'd need to be satisfied that his sort of maturity and social skills are ready to make that leap. Because, and maybe it's just because I look upon the Ball family as like the Kardashians of basketball. You'd have to be awfully good for me to want that around me, at least if I were running it. Now, other reasonable minds can differ there, and other people may disagree with that, and that's fine. That's just the way I view it. But he'd better be damn good for you to overlook all the other stuff that comes with it. But he certainly is very, very talented.
Your opinion about LaMelo Ball notwithstanding, and I'm not trying to invalidate it in any way, do you think that there are people in the NBA who view it the same way? Or because it's sort of a thin, weird draft, that they're more inclined to look the other way on questions like that because there aren't a whole lot of alternatives?
Well, that's a great question, Ray. I don't think they would look the other way. I think they would just, I think everybody, and myself included, would take the position that at some point, everybody's worth the risk. So the question is, if you identify something as risk, at some point, everybody's worth it. And you know, you can name players that have had certain injuries or injury concerns or concerns in some areas, and you say, well, okay, it's not worth it in the top five, but it's worth it. You know, Michael Porter Jr., same thing. Like, talent to be a top five pick, but you're concerned about his back and the injury, and he hadn't played in a year and all that stuff. So at 14, risk to Denver. So similar with LaMelo Ball, at least the way I view it, of risk that comes with him. If the alternative that somebody you're going to take at three or whatever the number is, you're going, wait a minute, you know, that guy's not that great. This guy is great, but he comes with some baggage. I'm willing to carry that baggage at three. I'm not willing to carry it at one or two versus Wiseman or Edwards, but I'm willing to carry it at three versus this other guy. I think that's more the calculus than some, and I'm not sure exactly how you meant that, but this sort of you're going to ignore something based upon talent. I don't think they ignore anything. I think they're willing to accept certain things at a level of talent that they wouldn't accept in a lesser level of talent, if that makes any sense.
Jay, you always make an awful lot of sense. You don't need to use that caveat. You are one of the best. We are so lucky to have a chance to tap into you. Thank you very much. I mean, all you can hope for is a guest who can carry 25 minutes of radio, and you just did that. Outstanding. Thank you so much for joining us, and we really appreciate it. Stay at home, safe and sound.
You too. Great being with you as always. Thank you.
Thank you so much to Jay Billis of ESPN here with Damon Ratto and Kolsky. John Dickinson in for Matt Kolsky again today, and we want to say thank you to Golden State Lumber for continuing to be a great sponsor here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. They are committed to health and safety for their customers and employees. Since 1954, they've been here for professional builders and contractors, and they remain their top concern. As an essential service, their lumber yard remains open from 6 to 3 p.m. on Monday through Friday. Golden State Lumber, again, committed to their professional customers. You can go ahead and experience what it's like to work with true pros like they have at Golden State Lumber. 855-GSL-YARD for professional builders. 855-GSL-YARD. They can have materials delivered the next day, if not the same day, for lumberyard locations. GoldenStateLumber.com. Remember, call ahead, 855-GSL-YARD, around for over three generations, providing outstanding customer service. Golden State Lumber, when you succeed, they succeed. Thank you very much again for sponsoring, and we are back in just a moment, and when we do come back in just a moment, how the NBA is turning to Las Vegas to maybe figure out a way to save their season. And I get it. Vegas seems like a good idea. What if I told you that here in the Bay Area, it might not be a bad idea either? 888-957-9570 is the number. Steve Kerr live at 5 here on 95.7 The Game. Stick around for all of that. Damon Ratto and Kolsky brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.